This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming to you live for the Built Forward Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the fans, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network and wherever you are in the free Odyssey app. Good Tuesday morning. We've got a game five. Knicks and Pistons tonight at the Garden. Hopefully the Knicks take care of business and move on and get ready for a Celtics series where that's going to be very intense. And hopefully you feel like they'll have a chance to beat the Celtics if they take care of business tonight against Detroit. A record-breaking day or record-tying day for Brandon Nimmo in a huge blowout Mets over the Nationals. That was fun to see. Yankees end up losing, but you know they got a couple issues there for sure, but nothing to totally panic about. And we've got draft fallout. I mean, you had a viral video yesterday, Boomer viral video. I had a viral one on Friday. You had a viral one on Monday. We are the viral boys on the fan. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, GM. Doing well. And, Brandon Nimmo was amazing yesterday. It all happened in three innings, too, by the way.
Yeah.
And watching that was, you know, that's one of those, you know, that's a mail-in game for the Washington Nationals, and it's a pile-on game for the New York Mets. But that was great to see him, and also to have Jeff McNeil back in the lineup now for three games, and he's hitting every single game. And Carlos Mendoza said after the game, if Jeff McNeil is pulling the ball like he did yesterday and he hit the home run, then, you know, all's right in his world from a hitter's perspective. But, you know, quite frankly, what I was thinking about yesterday was, you know, that's your healthy nine-man or eight-man team. When you think about it.
Yeah, with Alvarez being back and McNeil being back.
That's your healthy team right there. That is your New York Mets until they, you know, get to the trade deadline and decide to add or, you know, whatever they're most likely pitching. But I would just say that if that's going to be the team and the team is going to, you know, put up offensive numbers like they had. Now, the bullpen has faltered a little bit here.
Got some issues there. There's no two ways about it.
But I also give a lot of credit to Griffin Canning. You know, this is a guy that's fought through, you know, guys on base, you know, bearing down when you need to bear down. So, I mean, that's a nice little find right there.
Mets. And this was someone who, you know, I wasn't as familiar with when he ended up signing. Then you go back and you look at his numbers and you go, this guy could not have been worse and still had a job in the majors. They are really pushing this pitching lab deal. And I'm thinking, well, maybe he doesn't even make the rotations. It's some depth. But then you get a couple of injuries, the Montas injury, the Manai injury. So now he's got to be a part of the starting rotation. And this guy's been nothing short of spectacular, which is incredible. I mean, look at the numbers. 2.61 ERA and a 4-1 record. 31 strikeouts, the 14 walks for Griffin Canning. I mean, anybody who's ever managed Griffin Canning, every other pitching coach in the majors looks at that and goes, how in the hell is that going on with this guy? And hopefully it continues. But the rotation with these guys who we're talking about a second year in a row where on paper doesn't look great as the best ERA in baseball.
Yeah, right. And David Peterson has the highest ERA at 3.29, which would be considered a very good ERA.
Yes.
So, this is one of the reasons why they're out to the start that they're out to. But the offensive output, even though they collapsed in, you know, 2 days ago, is just, it's really been fun to watch. And they're going to be one of the better offensive teams in the league this year. And hopefully that will continue. So, when they lose games, it's going to be like, I can't believe they lost that game. But then they're going to come back and they're going to bounce back because that seems to be kind of like the mindset of the team. It was that second half team that we saw last year that they've carried now into the first half. And this, again, you know, and we can say this until he finally really starts to heat up. This is really with a mediocre Juan Soto, Juan Soto offensively.
Yeah, that's right. And you haven't seen the best of him, and it doesn't seem to be
as big of an issue when you're winning your 11 games over 500, you're four games up in the division over the Philadelphia Phillies. I mean, if this team, if everything was flipped, if the records were flipped, we'd be screaming and yelling and telling this guy to get out of town and trade him at the trade deadline already with the start that he's had. But it's fine. And Steve Cohen said, I'm not worried about it. Of course, he wasn't going to say he was going to be worried about it. That would have been weird if he did. But he was asked about it. He's not worried about it. I don't think anybody really is with the way that they are playing. And he's actually being used as a positive, just like you did. You know, they're 11 games over 500 in first place. He's barely woken up.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's when he goes on a heater, man, watch out.
Yeah, and he will. Of course he will. You know he will. He's out there every single game. He will. I guess the only thing, if I'm, and I'm not very concerned, but the only thing I would be concerned about is, you know, piecing this bullpen together and not blowing a ton of games with them being down and dealing with some injuries and who knows what's going on with Edwin Diaz. And can the rotation stay this good with those guys? So those are the questions they have right now.
Inevitably.
They have to slow down a little bit.
It will all slow down. But then on the other side of it, it may heat up offensively like it has. I mean, like, you know, they are an offensive juggernaut. And even with guys that are hitting around 200, they're like Brandon Nimmo, for instance. You know, he had his breakout game yesterday. You know, he's a quality baseball player. You love the guy on your team. You got to have guys like him on your team. And you know, you're not going to be benching guys that are, you know, making the money that they're making and have the contracts that they make. You got to fight through some of the hard times with them. So it was good to see him, you know, go off yesterday and, you know, tie a Mets record. I mean, 9 RBIs and basically in 3 innings is insane.
Yeah.
3-run homer and then a grand slam is ridiculous.
Yeah, it was good to see because, of course, he hasn't looked totally right as well this year. And then he's been dealing with some foot stuff that's been lingering through the end of last year, the beginning of this year. So to see that from him is tremendous. And, of course, I mean, they end up blowing him out. There was never any question if they're going to win this game or not. But, you know, it felt like a game they had to win with the fact that they weren't going to go down to Washington and lose 3 out of 4 to that team. That would have been brutal.
Plus they you know, gave up a huge lead the game before.
Yeah.
So you got to shelve that one, forget about it, as Carlos Mendoza said, and just worry about what's up next. Flush it. That's right.
Flush it.
And speaking of flushing it, you and I, like you said, we go viral on all of our different takes around here when it comes to the draft. You on Jackson Dart, me on Shedeur Sanders. You know, I just wanted to say something. You know, I was one of those players. Because I went back and I looked at a lot of stories that were written about me around my draft in 1984.
Yeah.
I got taken off of a few guys' teams' boards.
Sure.
And I think I've often told you the story that we had the combine down in New Orleans. And on a Friday night, the University of Maryland, we had our football dinner, if you will. And we were celebrating our year and everything. And the next morning, really early on Saturday, we had a flight to New Orleans. And we ended up spending about 8 hours at the combine, going through all the medical. I wanted to throw at the combine, so I threw at the combine. Steve Young did not throw at the combine. I was coming off of a shoulder injury, and I had separated my left throwing shoulder in the Sun Bowl, and Citrus Bowl. And then I wanted to still throw. I wanted to show the NFL that I was okay, that, you know, wasn't anything major, and I was throwing it all over the Superdome. I mean, I was throwing it everywhere. And I had meetings down there, and I remember getting on an elevator, and I was so ticked off because me and my Maryland teammates hadn't eaten anything from, I want to say, when we got on the plane that morning, because they told us not to eat anything because of blood work and everything.
Yeah.
And then we had to go through all the workouts and everything.
Oof.
And then it was probably by that time, by 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were at the Hyatt across the street from the Superdome. And we get into an elevator, and it's got me and maybe 4 of my teammates with me from the University of Maryland and a whole bunch of other people on the elevator. And I'm going off about how the NFL is treating us. And I'm like, this sucks. This is supposed to be NFL. They need to be taken care of. Something along those lines. Complaining. Sure. Just being boomer, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that Dan Henning, the Atlanta Falcon head coach, was on the elevator, but I didn't know it at the time. And I found out later on that, you know, Dan Henning said, there's no way we want that guy on our team. That guy's going to be a pain in the ass. And I remember, you know, and I was sliding in the draft just kind of like Shedeur and other players who have slid in the draft, as Mel Kiper obviously put it out there. And, you know, it really is. It's when you have a meeting or something happens with a team as they're doing background checks on you or just checking up on you, talking to people in your life or whatever it may be, because they go into deep, more so now today than it did back then. But I remember the Bengals head scout, his name was Frank Smouse. Went out to East Islip to talk to my high school football coach.
Yeah.
And my high school football coach, much like he did for the University of Maryland, trying to convince Maryland to take me from East Islip, he told the stories about me playing for him in both football and baseball to Frank Smouse. And I went back and I looked at the scouting report that Frank Smouse had on me. And it was a lot of what Sal Ciampi said about me. And that's one of the reasons why the Bengals ended up drafting me, because of my high school football coach.
Because Smouse went to your house.
Well, he went to the high school, didn't go to the house. But yeah, but you know what? He also went around the neighborhood.
Yeah,
he looked to see where I lived and you know where the town I grew up in, what kind of town was it, all of that stuff, and then finally ended up making it. You know, obviously with the 38th pick. Or 37 pick, whatever the hell it was.
A lot higher than 144, right?
It was, but still, yeah. Nonetheless, it's still a drop, and it is still, it's an embarrassing moment for somebody when you do drop in the draft, especially when you're expected, as Mel Kiper had me, as the number three player in the draft. And you keep dropping, you keep dropping, you keep dropping, and you're wondering, why are you dropping? Now, there are other reasons why, because the USFL was obviously still in play, and Steve Young had just signed a huge contract with the LA Express, Jim Kelly with the Houston Gamblers the year before. So that stuff was still around as well. But there was just a whole group of reasons why a guy would fall. And that happens every year to all different positions. And some guys don't even get drafted. Like, you remember when Tyreek Hill was coming out of college?
Yeah.
Of course, they had a first-round grade on him. Did he get drafted in the first round?
No.
No. But what he did, you know, in college was reprehensible, but somebody wanted to give him a second chance. And he made the most of the second chance. You could say whatever you want about him now, but he made the most of that second chance. And he got a huge contract from the Miami Dolphins. And I would just say that Shedeur Sanders, like any of us who have slid in the draft, you got to use that as fuel to the fire that is going to got to keep burning in your gut that you want this job in the worst way. And this is why I said this yesterday. He's going to go in there and he's going to have this attitude, and you know somebody's going to take him under his wing. Maybe Myles Garrett takes him under his wing. I don't know, but then who takes Dylan Gabriel under their wing?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I still think there's a decent shot that if he goes in there and hadn't learned anything from this process, Shedeur, that he gets cut. I mean, they already, you know, they went and got Kenny Pickett. They obviously got Joe Flacco. Those guys are going to be on the roster. They draft Dylan Gabriel, so you're allowed to have the three quarterbacks dressed during the game. You can have a practice squad quarterback. And you're telling me with all the stuff that you know, Shedeur, who he thinks how good he is and where he should be, is going to accept a practice squad assignment, then they'll probably end up cutting him.
Well, I will say, you know, he is, by every measure, at the moment, he's a needle mover.
Oh, yeah.
He's a needle mover, and he's a needle mover when it comes to PR and it comes to press and it comes to clicks. Do you remember Dan Lanning, the head coach of the Oregon Ducks?
Yeah, they're all about clicks, and we're about football.
Yeah, remember, we're about wins.
Yeah,
they're
about the clicks. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that tells you all you need to know. This started way back when, 2 years ago, and it probably started at Jackson State, too. Who knows? But I just think that he now has had a come-to-Jesus moment. It's real. It hurts. It stings. And you got to hope that he can handle it mentally and figure it out. But again, I don't. It's just it's a weird team. It's always been a weird team with the quarterback situation. And this quarterback room is the nuttiest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't know so Joe Flacco for sure is not going to be there for a very long time, but he's going to start.
He's 40 years old.
I would imagine he's going to start.
He should, but you know what's going to happen? I mean, the story is going to be Shedeur Sanders. That's all it is. I mean,
well, that's why I think there's a chance he could be cut, because if he's not doing anything in practice to separate himself, I mean, why would the Browns want to deal with that? I mean, he's going to have to go in there and impress the hell out of that team with his abilities. That's what he's going to have to do.
And he's going to have to go in there and he's going to have to show that he's a good teammate.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and if he's like, you know, Instagramming live and doing all these things other than worrying about football and playing football, then he's not going to be there for long. But I just think like Kevin Stefanski has just put himself and that team like right in the crosshairs.
Oh, they've been in the crosshairs for a long time.
No, but I mean, really in the crosshairs. I mean, this is going to be a media frenzy. it's going to be a media frenzy, and that's the needle mover part of all this. And that's great. I mean, that's what they want, and that's what they're looking forward to. It's going to be that.
Yeah, but he's also the fourth quarterback on the roster. So, like, when everybody shows up to camp, sure. But then what? Like, he's just taking reps like everybody else. It's not as if he's the start. I mean, maybe gets into a preseason game towards the end. But, I mean, there's only so much you could say about the guy who's the fourth quarterback on the roster.
I know. This is why I like what Pittsburgh did with Will Howard. They'll end up with Aaron Rodgers, and Will Howard will be there, and he'll learn. This is why I like what the Giants did with Jackson Dart. They have Russell Wilson here. He's going to be the stabilizing force. And maybe Jackson, you know, has got to come in. He's got to learn how to call the snap count.
And yeah.
Call a play in the huddle from a professional standpoint. And obviously, Brian Daboll likes him. And if you listen to Todd McShay, you would think that he and Brian Daboll are sleeping together. You would. I mean, you could tell that they are like, they are tight.
Wow.
They are tight.
I mean,
You could hear it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, he had all the Jackson Dart info early on. He talked about some of the things that Brian Daboll was thinking. And then after they have their draft, Todd McShay is, I mean, just extolling the virtues of Giants brass like you wouldn't believe.
So I'm with you. So there's information going towards Todd, and Todd's using that information like he should. That's his job.
Yeah.
That's what he's supposed to do. But I'm just telling you, they are buddies. They are tight, and that all that information that he had. Now, there's two other things that happened during this draft. Obviously, the Jax Albrick prank phone call to Shador. Now, these prank phone calls happen every year, by the way. This is a high-profile prank phone call, and they did it knowing that he would be on Instagram Live. They knew that he would be on social media.
Yeah.
So, you know, this generation of the social media meatheads are out there, and that's exactly what this was. And think about this for a second. Carson Shane. You know, he puts Jackson Dart out there on social media. Like, now all of a sudden the executives and the coaches and probably some of the owners, Brick Johnson, who knows, are on social media putting their stuff out there and basically exposing what their dads are doing or what they're thinking.
Yep. More than a couple of them. Yeah, I mean, this is a new way to find out.
It's crazy.
What teams are thinking is just start following their kids on social media.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, the kids are, and I'm sure the dads are.
They don't love it.
I can't see how they could love it, but what do you do? I mean, it's pretty cool. Your dad's a coach or a GM in the NFL, and you have access to information. And you just can't help yourself because you're on social media.
Yeah, of course. And like if this happened in 1985, there'd be no record of it unless someone pulled out a camcorder, you know, and started filming it. Where here, you know, it could be filmed, it could be posted in a matter of seconds. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different world all around. And I'll tell you, Carson Shane now 2 years in a row. One, he was right about the quarterback, at least, in Jaden Daniels. Two, he was right about who they were going to draft because he knew how much he loved Jackson Dart. Puts out the highlight reel the day before the draft. Incredible.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
You know, Nick's got to take care of business tonight because you got to believe that the Celtics are going to win tonight against the Magic.
Well, yeah, I mean, come on. We knew that.
Right, so OKC got through 4-0. I think there's two. Obviously, the Clippers and Denver are tied up at 2-2.
Yeah.
I think every other playoff round, I think, is pretty much one-sided.
Yep, feels that way.
It looks
like it's going to happen. We already know the matchups for the most part. So, yeah, let's hope tomorrow we know for a fact that the Knicks are moving on so you don't have to go back to Detroit and deal with any of that nonsense.
Eastern Conference on the side of the NHL bracket is pretty much all 3-1, I think. Florida beat Tampa Bay last night. But on the Western bracket, it's all, like, tight.
Ooh,
the teams are, like, 2-2s. Yeah, and Dallas is up 3-2. On the Avalanche, and that's been an unbelievable series.
All right, Jerry Recco is here with that and more. What's going on, Jerry?
Brought to you by Surf Pro Cleanup, Restoration, and Construction. Visit surfpro.com. So since you're on the basketball, also tonight, Bucks and Pacers, and Damian Lillard did tear the Achilles. Mm. So he is done. Knicks and Pistons at 7:30 at the Garden, game 5 there. You had the Warriors and Rockets last night. A lot of people like Houston coming into this thing, but the Warriors getting the job done down the stretch.
Baseline right, Fred VanVleet. to Şengün with 10 seconds remaining. At the top of the key, at the free throw line, a jump hook from 14 feet, side rim right, missed. Rebound, Jimmy Butler with a foul. 4 seconds left.
Yeah, and if it sounds disappointing, that's because that's Rockets radio, and they were expecting a big basket there, and then they missed the three-pointer the other way. And 109-106, the final as Golden State wins. They take a 3-1 series lead. Here was Şengün on the missed shot first.
You know, I could have go to rim, but that was Looney was down there when I saw him, so I would just turn and took my shot. You know, that's my shot. I'm making those through the years now, so.
But he didn't in this spot, and as he would go on to say, it certainly hurt. Draymond Green was defending him, the ageless one, on how he defended that play.
He likes the ISO right in the middle of the paint. So, you know, he started coming downhill. I gave a little ground. And Stack always tells us it's a time that you have to get serious. He says it's time to get, and you just try to pick that point, you know. I want to pick it too early.
And he picked it at the right time, and they take game four. Now, this clip from Jimmy Butler, I think, is very serious. So he had 27 points. At times in the game, you can see, and if you can read lips, I mean, there's some nasty things being said between him and Dylan Brooks back and forth. So a reporter post-game thought it was all in fun, and as you will find out, if Butler's telling the truth here, it's not.
Jimmy, you and Dylan got into it. It looked like you guys were having fun. Like, took it back to the playground almost, it looked like. What was it like out there? And it looked like you guys were, like, going back and forth. Did you enjoy that element of the game?
No, we're not having fun. Give me a record for this. I don't like Dylan Brooks, so we're never having fun. I'm a fierce competitor. He's a fierce competitor. But there ain't nothing fun about that.
I'll tell you one thing. At least he gives them the respect, though, right?
He's saying he's a fierce competitor.
Like,
yeah.
I'm a fierce competitor. Yeah.
And Butler had 27 points.
And how about him, by
the line?
Getting out of Miami and all of a sudden just becoming the missing piece in Golden State.
Forced his way out of Miami.
Yes.
A place that he loved, by the way, that he forced himself to.
That is very true. And at first didn't want to go to Golden State, remember?
Yep.
So I wonder how much that cost him.
Yeah, state tax.
Here's
wise.
How much it cost him. Yeah. It doesn't matter because they make so much money.
Well, yeah. Well, good for him. But this is the only Warriors go on to win this.
Agreed. Cavaliers easy over the Heat. This game was so bad. This was the TNT guys at halftime. The score was 72-33 in favor of Cleveland. Ooh. Hold on, let me find it. There you go.
This might be the worst game I've ever watched.
Ernie. I try not to ever use the word quit or choke. Because you can see, and I'm not very seldom using. This is quitting at its finest right here.
Meaning
wow,
Miami.
And this is on their home court, too, by the way.
138-83 is the final score.
Yeah.
Could you imagine spending money to go watch that last night?
No, I cannot. They're going to have to do something there in Miami. That Heat culture seems to be a little bit dead.
I would say so. You know what? They fought through that play-in to get to this, but then just got completely annihilated. Here was Kenny Atkinson, says, my team just focused.
We don't seem to have letdowns, you know, and that's rare. It's just rare, you know. With any team, we rarely have letdowns.
Donovan Mitchell at 22 says it's just a step.
We have a bigger goal in mind. You know, I think for us, understanding that this is special. We've been doing special things all year, but we didn't come here just to sweep in the first round and get to the second. You know what I mean? So the goal is how can we, you know, take advantage of this rest, this break, and then be ready to go for next round.
Spoelstra to the Nuggets. What do you think?
Wow, you think they're going to get rid of Spoelstra, huh?
I think maybe not like a get rid of, but maybe the time is run out type of thing. You know, maybe this is a turn the page spot. Turn Miami. You know, like sort of like you were talking about Mike Sullivan.
Yeah.
We were talking about Mike Sullivan, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it's like, hey, you know, hey, the Ranger job's open. Like maybe it's time for me to leave this place. Got a little stale.
Maybe he doesn't want to leave Miami.
Yeah. I don't know.
It all depends on what Pat Riley says, right?
All true. And Pat Riley says every 10 years you should change up your life.
That's how long has my Spoelstra's been there for more than 10 years?
So maybe he believes it's time. Might be time for Riley, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's been at least, 15 years?
Yeah, but Riley has been the coach and then an executive, so two different jobs.
It's got to be, 30 years.
Well, for Spoelstra, it's been, 16, I think.
Right.
Right, so, but for Riley, it's been there, since 95?
It's a long, yeah, well, after the Knicks.
Was his last Knicks run?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really long time.
All right, let's get to the baseball. We'll start with the later game first. This was in Baltimore where the Orioles took the series opener from the Yankees.
Two balls, two strikes, and the pitch. Breaking ball, swung on, hit a long way. Right field, down the line. That ball is gone.
Who knows?
Well, he hung one and paid for it, and the walks killed him. Couple of walks and then a ding-dong. O'Hearn with his fifth home run, RBIs 9, 10, and 11.
Yep, Dave Sims with the call here on the Fan. You walk, guys, you get burned.
Any Yankee fan caught this. Caught this home run. Did you see that?
He throw it back?
I think it was a girl who caught it.
Anyway, that was the big blow in the third inning. A 4-3 win for the Orioles. Will Warren was the pitcher who walked those two batters and then gave up the home run. Here he was talking about the bad inning.
Yeah, I mean, catcher's never trying to start off the inning with back-to-back walks. And then, obviously, O'Hearn did the damage on a pitch that didn't get quite in.
No, when he hit it to right field over the fence. Now, in the post game, the reporters went to O'Hearn. This was on Mason, and they opened it, you know, talking about the home run and the way this team needed a jolt because they've been bad. Even with the win, they're 11-17.
Kind of exhaled after you hit that ball with the way the guys have been struggling and runners in scoring position. You kind of sense what a big hit that was.
Yeah, I want to start by apologizing to the kids, you know, watching. There's a hot mic in the dugout there, and, you know, obviously we're fired up and say some things that we shouldn't maybe, you know, we don't want kids to hear. So I just want to say sorry for that.
So I said class or no class with Alan. I think we took that as very classy. Here is the hot mic audio. He agreed. Here's the audio.
And the hydration station.
Wow. Now, he didn't say what you think he said.
Oh, he said something else?
But it's close.
All right.
And it's not great.
So yeah, obviously.
That was very nice.
But what did he say?
Bowls.
Oh, that's what it was? Oh.
And a bleeping in the middle of it.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was.
That's great. So, sorry, kids.
If you hear it, it's loud. Like right. Even Michael Kay pauses and they start kind of giggling a little bit.
Just some third graders telling that to his teacher a little bit later today.
I was watching the Yankee game last night.
Yeah.
And you know what you can do? Anyhow, in the loss, Anthony Volpe and Austin Wells at RBI doubles. Carlos Rodon, the start tonight on the Fan at 6:35. It was an offensive orgy for the Mets yesterday in Washington, and Brandon Nimmo had himself a monster, specifically in the late innings, a monster game.
Bases loaded and one out. First pitch. Swung on and absolutely crushed to right field. Cruz going back to the warning track. He's a spectator. Long gone to the left of the bullpen. Grand slam, Brandon Nimmo.
Yep, that was Pat McCarthy on Mets Odyssey Radio. That's after he homered in the previous inning. He had 9 RBIs on the afternoon. The Mets beat the Nationals 19-5. This game was so out of hand. Ahmad Rosario was pitching in the last inning, too. Here was Nimmo on Mets Odyssey Radio. Wasn't aware that he had actually tied the Mets record for RBIs in the game. It was Carlos Delgado, however many years ago, with the 9.
Even when I was coming up with the position player pitching and, you know, possibly was going to have bases loaded or guys in scoring position again, I was only just thinking, like, you know, hey, let's see if we can keep extending this. Like, I was, you know, kind of like, maybe I can get into double digit in one day.
Well, almost. Unfortunately for him, Mark Vientos homered, had a 3-run homer right before he came up again with an opportunity to drive in another run. Vientos, the home run. Jeff McNeil homered earlier in the game as well. And Pete Alonso, a couple more hits, an RBI single, batting average now at .337. Here was Griffin Canning, 5 shutout innings for the win. Canning, who people didn't think much of, 4-1, ERA of 2.61 right now, and he says not a bad start.
Yeah, pretty good. Again, I'd like to get deeper in the game. Yeah, just think I can clean up some stuff with my execution of changeup and slider when I'm ahead in count. But yeah.
Maybe. He still gets you 5 innings. I'd say
his ball moves pretty good, though. I mean, when he's on,
that's all he's been on.
Yeah. Right, and that little changeup he has just falls completely out of the strike zone.
Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good so far. Tonight you've got David Peterson starting against the Diamondbacks. The Mets back home with a 7-10 start. Meantime, Steve Cohen was on the Show podcast. I think that's John Heyman's podcast, I believe. And, you know, they were talking about Juan Soto and the slow start, and he says no concerns.
I'm not worried about Juan. I mean, he is singly focused on baseball. He's a pure hitter. Let's have this discussion at the end of the year.
Okay, fair enough.
Can't even believe it!
Well, through 29 games, even with Soto not doing a whole hell of a lot offensively, the Mets are 20-9 on the year. All right, a couple of things from football. We got more audio coming up next hour, but this hour I will take you to D.C., where the Super Bowl champion Eagles visited the White House. So a couple of things from President Trump with the Eagles. First, he, like everyone else, talking about Saquon Barkley.
I was with the Giants and the head coach and some people, and I said, do anything you have to, but don't lose Saquon. They lost Saquon. That was not good. I called that one. That was an easy one to call because he played damn well for the Giants.
Apparently the Giants have refuted this.
Yeah, Pat Hanlon said, stop yapping.
That's fake news. Yeah. Sad.
By the way, that could be fake. That's most likely fake news.
Look at my man Big Dom back there. Look at his fit.
He's
this
loving it.
This guy with the hat and the chains and the shirt and everything. I mean, oh. He had that outfit laid out since they won the Super Bowl. He goes, this is what I'm going to wear to the White House. I bet you smells really good, too, like you put on a nice cologne.
Yeah.
Oh, look at Big Dom. Oh, I've never been more jealous of another man.
Look at how big Lane Johnson is.
Looking like that. Yeah, I know. It's a big dude.
That is a big dude.
They got a big team.
They certainly do. Big team made by a little guy, Howie Roseman.
Yes.
That is very true, too. And then lastly.
So I want to congratulate once again, and let me just say, fly, Eagles, fly, right?
There you go. So Saquon Barkley was there, played golf with him, and was beaten up on social media and told everybody to get out of his mentions.
Good for him.
It's funny, yes. Tonight in Raleigh, the Devils take on the Hurricanes. They're fighting for their lives, as you know. Carolina leads the series 3-1. And then you mentioned a couple of the other series. The Stars beat the Avalanche 6-2, Dallas up 3-2, and the Panthers over the Lightning 4-2. They have a 3-1 series lead there. I'll get you some highlights throughout the course of the morning. Next hour, we will hear from Brandon Bean of the Bills.
I watched this morning.
That was awesome. Airwaves,
so by the way, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, I wish we had a general manager around here who would fire back like that occasionally.
Exactly,
man. You know,
talking about wide receivers, we're scoring more points than anybody.
It's great.
I will play the audio next hour. And also, Derek Carr was giving a sermon, apparently, in church and addressed his career. So we'll get to that next hour, too.
You think you have audio of that?
There is audio of that.
They're recording sermons now?
Apparently so. It was in Vegas, a church in Vegas.
One of those super churches?
Maybe.
Big ones? Thousands of people in there?
Maybe. I'm not sure. Wow. All I could see is him on the stage walking around. I didn't see, you don't call it an audience. What do you call it?
the parishioners?
Congregation?
The congregation.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know how many people were there, but there were people there, and he was talking about life and his career.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Yesterday, Jerry played some of the audio of CBS Sunday Morning with Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson, and how Jordan Hudson was shooting down questions and saying, we're not talking about that. Oh, no, we're not talking about that? Okay, well, some stories came out that it was even worse than that, and apparently she stormed out of the room during the interview at one point. Jordan Hudson interviewing Bill Belichick, CBS Sunday Morning. Tony DiCopoli was the person who was interviewing. Yeah. Bill Belichick stormed out of the room at one point, delaying the interview by 30 minutes. She also supposedly would stop and correct Belichick when answering questions about football. And there's people at UNC that are reportedly growing concerned. There was also a part of that TMZ report that I read yesterday that Tony DiCopoli and the CBS production people were like, this is just not going well. How can we salvage this thing? And then almost rescheduled the interview because it was going so poorly, but then decided just to power through and get something on there. And then they wanted to show a little bit of what was going on with Jordan Hudson, but not all of it. And then they showed her shutting down a question to give you a little bit of a taste of what was happening. And this is just, it's growing and growing. And I got to be honest with you. As far as do what you want to do, if it's legal, it's legal. It could be off-putting to some people. But if I'm someone at North Carolina and I see how involved she is and how new she is into his life, yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned, too, that she's got too much power over this guy. I would. This is crazy. She's shutting down football questions and stuff. She's representing the university. She doesn't even work there.
How have they been together now?
I mean, it's been a while. I mean, be over a year, right?
No, it's like 4 years.
Oh, it's 4 years?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Wow.
Yeah,
that's 4 years. Fast. So, I mean, like, she basically...
Wait.
I mean...
They started dating when she was 20?
Yeah, I think actually 19. She was still 19 at the time. Because it's come out where she's put out the different happy anniversary or friendiversary.
Yeah.
And yeah. So it was 4 years ago that I went on the plane.
So we probably just found out about it around a year ago. But they've been dating for a long time.
I mean, it's an interesting... I don't even know how to react to it, honestly.
Yeah, there's also this whole thing now because this is what people do. I have to admit, I did think the same thing crossed my mind was when she said, you know, that Tony DiCopoli, who you should know him, right? The CBS connection?
I know Tony, yeah, sure.
Yeah, we should text him, have him on the program.
Sure.
Give him a text.
I'm surprised that he did that as opposed to Nate.
Yeah,
true. You know, like you would think that I would think that Nate would sit down with him as an ex-football player.
Yeah,
but maybe Tony got the interview. I'm not sure how they decide that at CBS News.
Hey, Stephen Waldron, CBS Sports Network. How are you this morning, Stephen?
Good morning, boys. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Can you get me Tony DiCopoli on the program before 10 a.m.?
Aren't they working right now?
Yeah, they're off.
Yeah,
the
they're
air.
On the air right now.
Yeah, but they're done before 10, right?
Yeah, they go to 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so. Just have them call in after they're done.
Yeah, after they're done, or maybe in a commercial break.
I'd like to promote CBS Morning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, 901. Get ready.
Okay. All right, very good. No, I'm serious. Get him on the air, Stephen. This isn't a joke this time.
We're not kidding, Stephen.
We're not kidding.
We're being demanding.
We
right
need
now.
Him. Like, remember when I told you to go get Akshay Batia off the putting green and bring him up, and you were like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, well, that was different. Akshay is right in front of us. Tony's not in front of us.
Yeah, but you work in the same company. You give him a call. You reach out to a PR person. It's harder to pull a professional golfer out of his routine to go do an interview than it is to get a colleague on the air, isn't it?
I know one thing. If this were Fox News doing it, Fox Sports 1 would have them on promoting it.
Yeah, just like that. Snap of a finger.
I'm on it.
All right, he's on it.
He's
right,
on thanks. It.
He's on it. So anyway, there are people saying that maybe now she's an escort because of the answer to that question. Which was, we're not talking about how we met. So now there's some people implying whole thing.
I thought they met on an airplane.
Sure, doesn't mean, okay, escorts don't fly?
I thought it was a random meeting on an airplane. That's what I thought.
I mean, that's what they say, yeah. So then why was she so concerned about the story of them meeting? We're not talking about that?
I have no idea. Did he didn't write anything in his book about it.
About what?
About the way they met or
well, it's
her.
Called The Art of Winning. My lessons from my life in football.
Yeah, so you have the book. You have the book over there.
Yeah, it's right here.
All right. Can I see the book for one sec?
There's actually a camera in here. Jordan Hudson's on the other end of it. Every person who opens the book, she watches. See what's going on.
Stop.
And while you're looking through that, let's go to Joy in Paramus. What's going on, Joy?
Hi, how are you?
Good, Joy. What's up?
First of all, I have to say I absolutely positively love the show and I listen every morning.
Oh, thank you, Joy.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. This topic fascinates me because I'm a longtime Jet fan and the whole Belichick thing, this fascinates me. There's a couple of things I'd like to say. Number one, the ripped shirt thing, getting kind of old. You're a multimillionaire. Wear a nice shirt. That was great on the sidelines. You look like the hard ass, the whole nine yards. Great. The other thing is since he is known for being such a disciplined kind of coach, and that's what gave him success, now he's got his girlfriend or whatever, you know, flying escorts or whatever, telling him what to say and what not to say. In my opinion, he's kind of losing his credibility. He looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's still an amazing coach, and it's just getting all washed away by his teenage girlfriend telling him, no, don't answer that. Don't do that. Come on. This is Belichick. What's going on?
I know. It's wild. Of all the people that, and thanks, Joy, we appreciate it. Of all the people we've come across in sports, Bill Belichick is not the person that I thought would have someone on the side of an interview telling him what and what not to say, and that person being a 24-year-old, 25-year-old girlfriend.
You know, it is kind of, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he's coaching college.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and I wonder if this had something to do as to why, like, remember we were saying, like, there's no way the Giants are going to hire him under these circumstances. Could you imagine, like, he and Jordan Hudson in the Giant building right now? What is Pat Hanlon saying?
I got to tell you something. I disagreed with you originally on that whole thing. But now, after the way this is playing out, I was wrong on that one. Yeah, I mean, John Mara.
Hey, can we do something about this, bro?
Yeah, but I don't like. Again, I'm
having trouble sleeping.
I don't think any of us would have expected her to inject herself the way that she has.
Yeah. Yeah, neither did I.
I was just like, this is not happening for the Giants, guys. It's just not happening.
I mean, and she is very attractive woman. We know this, but man, when she has that mad face on, you could see it. Like, she would shoot that, those looks she was shooting Tony DiCopoli.
No, I feel like North Carolina did what Colorado did. So Colorado was basically an awful football program for a million years, it felt like.
Yeah.
And they needed something to juice it up, and they got Deion, because Deion's the ultimate promoter. And look, even though they're, 13-12 or whatever, 14-13 over the last 2 years, I mean, look what he's put Colorado on the map. They are on the map. Like, that's 100% needle-moving.
Yeah.
So I think that North Carolina probably felt the same way.
Yeah, and it also one part.
We need something that's going to move the needle, that makes North Carolina football relevant again.
Yeah, and that's why they hired him, for sure, and they expect to win and have all the Bill Belichick stuff come with it. But they also have Jordan Hudson, which is something that the Patriots didn't have to deal with. And, you know, Dave Portnoy's a huge Patriots fan. I heard him talking about this, and I don't necessarily disagree. So when Tony DiCopoli asked Bill Belichick about the pictures, about him holding her up with the feet and the catching her out of the ocean thing, like, he almost looked confused as to, how did you guys see that? Like, I don't think he fully understands.
Oh, he understands.
No, I'm telling you, man. I think he puts himself in a bubble, and I don't think he's probably like, oh, like, we took those pictures and, like, a few people saw him. But, like, the way he reacted to it was almost like,
you know, there's two things. You know, he came to my dad's funeral, which was really nice of him to do that. That was out of the blue, because I don't have that kind of relationship with him.
Yeah.
But he was with the Jets at the time, and I think it was in the middle of all of that, resigning of the HC of the NYJ thing, and it was right in the middle of all that, and he showed up, and that really meant a lot to me. But I, the thing about it is I've had beers with him at NFL functions where the owners and the coaches are there and everything. And he's a completely different guy than the guy that you see that's being interviewed. And even last year when he did that roundtable with the top 100 players.
Yeah.
That's the Bill Belichick that I know. That's the guy that is the human being, not the football coach or the monotone or on to Cincinnati guy. There's two different personalities there. There's one that is the football coach. And then there's one in his private life, or the way he is away from the game, where he's as normal as anybody. And funny, like hilarious.
Yeah, well, charming enough to have a 24-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah, but that's the thing that's really just, that's the bizarre thing, the amount of impact that
she's not in the background, that's for sure.
No, she's not.
She's front and center. Yes. She's there. She's running his life right now.
And I wonder, I guess she feels like she's protecting him, I'm assuming.
Or her own interests. You know, who knows?